Please stand by. We are about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Michael Steffen. Please go ahead, sir.
All right. Thanks, Cindy. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you may be on the phone, and welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Mike Steffen, and I'll be the moderator for the call. As Cindy said, this call is being recorded, and within 24 to 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be made available off of the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site, so you may replay it at your convenience. If you haven't yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. And there's an e-meeting URL that's available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. If for some reason you're unable to access the e-meeting, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site, or if you go to any IBM.com site and type in the TechDoc number, which is 700-6808, in the search box in the black section at the very top of the page. Again, that number is 700-6808. You may also instant message the co-moderator, Lee Jacobson, by clicking on his ID in the e-meeting attendee list. His ID is leejacob@us.ibm.com, and he will assist you. Today's presenter is Max Terpolilli. Max joined the WBI Level 2 team about 4 years ago. He works closely with customers and development to drive WBI products to succeed in the marketplace. Today's topic is WebSphere Partner Gateway Hot Topics Overview, Hints and Tips. It will include an Adobe presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines will be muted, and after the presentation, the lines will be opened up for a question and answer session. If you are in the meeting, you should see the cover page of the presentation. At this point, I'll turn the presentation over to Max. Go ahead, Max.
Hello, everybody. My name is Max Terpolilli, and I worked on this WebSphere Partner Gateway presentation with my colleague, Damu Veluswamy, who, like him, is currently on vacation. Our intent for this overview is to focus on some topics and product features which we noticed while working with the WPG customers. Somehow, they were not clear and generated customers' queries aimed at knowing more, a better understanding their purposes and how to use them appropriately. Our goal with this WebSphere Technical Exchange presentation is to clarify these subjects and make sure they are fully understood. Let's go to slide number 2. And this is the agenda of the topics we're going to present. Some of them are standalone. Others, like the archive or the security configuration processes, break down to sub-processes and may span to several charts. At the end, we're going to have a QA session. Let's go to chart number 3. Okay, the first subject concerns the ability to use your console server to connect to the database of another installation. For example, if I have WPG installations A and B, and at some point I have the need to use my console, which was initially configured to use environment A, to actually use the database on environment B, then I have to make some changes in the console configuration so that the new database will be referenced in place of the one given at installation time. In order to accomplish that, we're going to need to update two files, and specifically the BCG console properties and the resource XML. In the first file, we need to replace the current schema name for the database used in the scenario A with the schema name used in the new scenario. In this example, the schema name maxd is replaced by db2 inst1. In the resource XML file, more changes are needed, such as the database name, password, IP address, and port. In this example, the database name BCG apps is replaced with BCG max, my server with max, and the default port number of 50,000 is replaced with 360.020. Let's go to chart number 4. Pretty much the same topic on this slide as the one we saw earlier. This summarizes the changes needed to switch the WPG elements to another common folder. So basically, before we saw the scenario of pointing to a different database, this is pointing to a different file system, basically. And this would require the setup of a new common folder with a similar directory structure as the existing one. Then you need to map or mount the new file system. And you need to update the URI paths for a non-rep and message store and the LG media table. And after doing that, you need to update the property files for the three components, console, receiver, and router, changing all the properties pointing to the old file system to reference the new one. Okay, let's go to chart number 5. A possible problem that might occur in the previous configuration or in a split topology scenario where the Doc Manager is installed as a service on a Windows box and the common directories are on a remote machine is that the Doc Manager service may not start successfully. The problem that we've seen here is that the BCG user account might not have the authority to log on as a service, which results on the service startup error 1069. The service did not start due to a logon failure. To fix this problem, the BCG user needs to be added to the list of the users who are allowed to run as a service. And to do this, you go to Control Panel, Administrative Tools, Local Security Policy, Local Policies, the User Rights Assignment, and eventually you land in the last screen of the Logon as a Service, and that's where you need to add the BCG user. Another problem that I want to mention concerns issues with the mapping of the common folders, which are in a remote location during the Doc Manager installation. Problems can be caused by the fact that there may be some issue accessing the common folders, and to avoid this, I always recommend to use the UNC, the Universal Naming Convention, which is basically the \\ machine name \\ the share name. And then the use of the same user ID and password for the BCG user during the installation of a console receiver and the document manager is highly recommended. All right, let's go to chart number 6. Okay, so this chart is a roadmap of the archive process. The full archive process consists of 6 basic operations. And the first one is copy data from the database tables to an archive location in the file system. The data in these tables is a sort of an index pointing to the actual transaction files which are located in the common folders. After that, the second step would be to copy those transaction data from the file system non-rep folder to an archive location. This data is the actual payload that is being archived for legal reasons, for example. Then step 3 and 4 are meant to purge the recipient of data we archived in the first two steps. So basically you will clear the system. It is very important to pay attention to the sequence of these steps. That is, if you archive the database tables, step 1, and right after that you delete them, step 3 in this chart, you know, thinking, well, I have archived this data, so while I'm here, I just go ahead and purge it. This would actually be disruptive because it would prevent step 2, the non-rep archiving, from working. The reason being, as mentioned before, is because step 2 uses database tables as an index to clear the transaction data in the file system. So if the index is purged, the transaction data in the non-rep folder would become unknown to the system. Steps 5 and 6 are, well, we can call it optional. They are restore steps, which basically reinstate the data we have previously archived in step 1 and 2. Okay, let's go to chart number 7. Okay, now let's see these steps in details, starting with the copy. To archive the database tables, you will need to use the export script, supplying 5 parameters. Cutoff date, that is all data logged before the specified cutoff date, will be copied from the database tables to the archive location. Then you need to specify the location of the archive, the database name, and the user and password. And the expected output would include 4 files. Basically, you will be getting the entries from the table LG cert archive, the certificates that have been used, and then the entries for the LG MSG archive, and a report for the SQL run in this operation. Okay, let's go to chart number 8. Okay, then the other portion of the copy operation is to save the actual transaction files from the non-rep folders to the archive location. This operation is accomplished by the archive script, which uses the parameters coded in the DB archive params .property file. In this file, you will need to specify basically all the parameters that we see in the chart. The DB module which can be non-REP. And then we have the archive task, can be one or zero, one being the copy or zero, the delete. And then the archive directory, if you're using DB2 or Oracle, and then the URL, username, password, the driver, and of course you will need the date, the cutoff date. The expected output in this case will include the actual transaction documents copied from the non-REP folder to the archive location and a DB output, a report file, basically, of the copy operation. Okay. Chart number 9. Okay. After the copy operation is completed, we end up having the file system database table data saved in our archive location. So we could now proceed to delete this data. The first step of the purge is for the file system non-REP and the message store folders. One thing to be said is the sequence, again, is important because if we purge the database tables first, which is step 4, then we will not be able to purge documents in the file system folders. This because the index that is kept in the database tables will be lost. Okay, let's go to the next chart, chart number 10. And in here, we have the last step of the purge, which is for the database tables. And this operation is accomplished running a stored procedure AR non-REP maintenance, which takes only one parameter, that is the cutoff date, basically. With this operation, the archival of transaction documents and subsequent cleanup of the WPG system is completed. In the next, let's go to the next chart. Basically, in the next two charts, we will be seeing the optional operation of restoring this data back into the system. So this is the first chart here of the restore operation, which starts with importing the data from the archive location where they were saved by the export script. This is done by the import script, which takes five input parameters. The location of the archive, the schema name, the database name, user, and password. Okay, let's go to the next chart, chart number 12. Now, in here, this is basically the last step. And here what we do is to reinstate the transaction documents from the archive location where they were saved by the archive script into the file system non-REP folder. This is done by the restore script, which takes two input parameters, the transaction documents archive location, and the DB output TXT report file, which was previously created by the archive script. Chart number 13. Okay. So, besides keeping the index of the actual documents in the file system, the database tables keep transaction records and logs that can be purged after archiving to free up some space in your system, basically, to keep the system light. There are three stored procedures defined for this task. We have the AR, state engine maintenance, which is designed to remove data from the state engine tables you have to look for the tables which start with a prefix BP underscore. And then we have the AR summary maintenance, which removes data from the summary tables. I'm sorry, the first one, the state engine maintenance, removes the data from the state engine, whereas the second from the state summary tables. Sorry about that. In the second case, those tables have a prefix as LG underscore SUM. And then the third one, the AR purge headers, which removes data from the logging tables, tables that start with prefix LG underscore. To be noticed that while the last two stored procedures take the cutoff data as an input parameter, the first one takes the number of days the user chooses to retain data. Okay, let's go to the next chart. Chart number 14. Okay, here the next two charts illustrate what is required to configure security on WPG. This first chart is about digital signature and encryption. Now, an easy way to remember the steps is to focus on one of them and then reverse the outbound, inbound procedure for the other. For example, to configure WPG for an outbound digital signature, you load your PKCS key pairs, which for a self-signed certificate can be obtained using the IKEYMEM script shipped with WPG. So you will be loading your PKCS in the hub operator profile and check the box for digital signature. For inbound digital signature, which would actually be a signature verification, you load the participant certificate in the participant profile and check the box for digital signature. If the certificate is signed by a certifying authority, then you need to install the CA certificate, basically, in the hub operator profile and check the box for root. As I was mentioning before, the reverse procedure applies for encryption. What we described for an outbound digital signature applies to inbound encryption, and the procedure described for inbound digital signature applies to outbound encryption, with the understanding that we have to check the encryption checkbox when uploading the certificates, basically. Okay, chart number 15. Uh, Okay, the other security configuration which is used a lot in is the server SSL. Honestly, I had a very few requests for client authentication configuration. So for outbound server SSL, you need to upload the certificate, whether that is a self-signed or a signed by a CA certificate in the hub operator profile. And then you need to check the box for root certificate. For inbound server SSL, you need to use the Eichmann script to add the PKCS key pair into the receiver key store, located in the common security key store folder. Client authentication. For outbound client authentication, you need to load the PKCS key pairs as a hub operator's SSL client certificate. For inbound client authentication, the certificate, whether that is a CA or a self-sign, needs to be added to the receiver trust store, and you can do that using the Eichmann script. Also, you need to run a second script, the BCG client auth.jacl, which basically allows you to enable, disable the client authentication. And I think that's about it for the security. Let's go to the next chart number 16. Okay, WPG logging. It's of two kinds. We have a database logging, and we have a file system logging. No user intervention is possible on the first, on the database logging, which cannot be suspended or stopped. We can control the second one, though. The file system logging can be tweaked through the log4j root category property, which can assume the values that we see in the chart: debug, info, warn, error, fatal, all, or we can turn it completely off. Depending on the WPG component, this property can be set in the files that we see in the chart. If it is the console, it's the BCG property for the doc manager and receiver. I apologize, I see an error in the chart where it says doc manager. It is actually the router dash was login property. And for the receiver, is the receiver was login properties. Okay. I think the last thing just tells us if we want to switch the login off, then we just set the log4j root category to off. Let's move on to slide 17. So, what happens if something goes wrong? Anything else, the answer varies depending on the circumstances. In our case, if the problem occurred at installation time, then we should look for the logs in the temp folder, which contains the hub and the DB loader subfolders where them. Actual installation logs are stored. Those files, of course, they hold critical information about possible installation errors. If the nature of the error points to something wrong with the WPG server component, then we should look at logs in the BCG Hub's logs folder. If the problem occurs at the runtime, another example, then we need to reference different logs, which are located under the profiles of each component. A special mention here can be reserved to use the scripts to export the configuration. I would avoid doing this operation unless you are specifically requested to do so by the support team. I think this will cover it all here. Let's go on to chart number 18. The last two charts cover they refer to a very common problem. That is, I forgot my hub admin password. What do I do to reset it? Well, all you need to do is to update the PR user table with the encrypted string that is reported in the chart, which will reset the password to its original value of capital PA55WRD. We've seen this problem a lot of time, and hopefully, having it in a presentation, in a chart, would help. And chart number 19 is basically the same thing for if you're running an Oracle database instead of a DB2. And that takes us to chart number 20, which basically the WPG presentation ends here, and these are some links for your reference concerning technical webcasts, podcasts, conferences, and events concerning WebSphere technology, some demos and tutorials in the IBM Education Assistant page. And then the electronic service request, the ESR tool for opening problem tickets electronically. And then if you want to have the opportunity to receive weekly technical support emails, you can just point to that link. And we'll end on slide 21, which is the QA.
Okay, thanks, Max. Cindy, at this point, we'd like to open up the lines for questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And if you find your question has already been asked, you may press star 2 to remove yourself. We'll pause for a moment to assemble the roster. And our first question comes from Aprojita Banerjee from Johnson Diversity.
Hi, Max. I have a question.
Hello, Rajita. Yes, please go ahead.
You said in one of the first slides, you said that we need to change the BCG console properties, for updating the DB tool, the database where we do the configure your console server to use the WPG database.
To use a different database.
Yeah. So you said, example that you had, it says that the DB tool, inst1, In the example was max T, and you're changing that to dB2 inst 1. But for us, we have it as dB2 inst 1, and when we go to WPG, it would be again dB2 inst 1. So would there be a problem using the same dB2 instance, or should we rename the existing one to a different one and then change it to dB2 inst 1?
Well, in that case, the IP address will be different, I suppose. If you have the same database name, the database is probably residing on a different server. So what you will be doing, you will be changing the property referencing the different host name.
What if it's in the same, if we use the same server, same DB2 server, but we use a different instance only?
Oh, a different...
The IP address would still be the same.
Different instance. Oh, I see what you're saying. I probably would imagine that there is a reference in the resource XML file for that as well, but I do not have the file in front of me. So I will not know for sure.
Yeah,
I would need to check that.
Okay, sure.
I would need to check that.
Yeah, because we would be going, you know, we would be creating a separate instance.
Right.
But, you know, it would still be the same.
So it would be basically same database name, same host name. You will be using the same port. It's just a different instance.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine that there is a reference for that in the resources XML, but it never happened. So I do not know exactly which property you need to change. But I can definitely look into it and get back to you.
Yeah, sure. And another question, Max. You know, the certificates that we have currently,
mm-hmm.
you know, for this, from the partners, do we have to reinstall all of them, or is there a way of moving those certificates?
You mean to migrate from 421 to
WPG?
Yeah, you have some migration steps that will allow you to migrate everything in the configuration. So you should be able to have those certificates moved into the new product.
Okay. And I just had these two questions.
And answering that.
You're very welcome. I will call you back with the answer concerning the first question.
Okay. No.
And as a reminder, that is star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Lori Gossel with Johnson Diversity.
Hi, this may just be a misunderstanding because I'm not used to the whole WBIC, WPG world. But when you were talking about copy and purge, the purge said purge to somewhere, and you were also copying to somewhere. So I was just wondering, are you actually making two backups of that data?
Well, the data in WPG are basically kept in two separate places. The data themselves are stored in the file system, but then there is sort of index, if you want, that points to the actual payload that is in the file system. So when you will be archiving, when you will be copying those data, you have to do two operations. One aim to the database and the second aim to the file system. So you will be copying the index from the database tables, and then the second operation will be copying the actual transaction documents from the file system into the archive location.
Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
Sure.
And as a reminder, that's star 1 for questions. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the call back over to Mr. Michael Stevenson for any additional closing remarks.
Okay, thanks, Cindy. Okay, well, at this time, we'd like to conclude the presentation. We hope that the information that Max presented today has been valuable to you. We do appreciate your participation. And remember that a replay of this presentation will be available on the IBM WebSphere Technical Exchange site within the next day or so. We hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on the WebSphere Technical Exchange site. So thanks for joining us today, and a special thanks to Max for doing the presentation for today.
Thank you. That does conclude today's IBM WebSphere conference. You may disconnect at this time, and we appreciate your attendance today.